This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's Thursday, the 12th of July, 2018. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We've got sunny skies. Expect to have a temperature near 90 today. Right now, it's 84 degrees at O'Hare and the lakefront.
And the Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. The major indices solidly in the green this afternoon. Let's get the latest on what's happening on Wall Street from Bloomberg and Joan Doniger.
Well, Rob, we are seeing a nice-sized bounce back on Wall Street. Earnings season is almost here. The big banks report tomorrow. Investors also have some reason to push trade concerns to the side. So right now, the Dow is up 233 points, the NASDAQ 96, the S&P 24. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is gaining about 0.5%, that thanks to a push from Coeur Mining. Industrial stocks are up on hints the U.S. and China may be ready to step back from one-upping each other with tariffs to instead talk over their trade dispute at a higher level. And tech shares are gaining today. That's putting things mildly, though. Facebook, Microsoft, and Amazon all hit all-time trading highs. Apple and Alphabet are up as well. That's behind the 1.25% jump in the NASDAQ. Microsoft trades on the Dow, too, and is among the tech shares that are boosting that average, as are Caterpillar and Boeing, both of which have been hard hit by trade issues recently. They, however, are forging ahead today with gains of 1.5% to almost 2%. Back to you, Rob and Chris.
Thanks, Joan. On today's Noon Business Hour, we're talking about why we're seeing big gains on Wall Street today, and we're also talking about a breakout video game.
And it's travel season, and if you're getting ready to book an airline trip somewhere, you might notice a little bit of sticker shock when you go to Expedia or some other website. That's because airline fuel prices are on the rise once again. We'll talk about all that and more coming up on the Noon Business Hour.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Shares of semiconductor giant Broadcom take a huge hit after investors frown at the company's acquisition plan. That's coming up in our next segment right now. Consumer prices are on the rise. More threatened tariffs on China could push them even higher. We're joined by Carl Riccadonna, U.S. economist, chief U.S. economist for Bloomberg. Carl, welcome back to the Noon Business Hour.
Good afternoon.
Why the pressure, the consumer prices on the rise?
I'm not so sure that consumer inflation will be boosted all that much by the tariffs. Certainly, if you slap a 25% tariff, or the latest round is 10% tariffs, on a product, it's going to be more expensive. But in many instances, those goods can be purchased elsewhere for only a slightly higher price than what was in place before the tariffs. So, for example, as we go through the list of items named in the in this latest round, $200 billion worth of product taxed at a 10% tariff. It includes things like baseball gloves, handbags, luggage, dog leashes. These are things that, if they're not coming from China, can easily be sourced from other areas, possibly in the U.S., but also from places like Vietnam and Thailand and whatnot. So that 10% tariff won't fully be passed through to U.S. consumers. One way to think of inflation pressures is the price of the product, certainly coming down the pipeline. But we also have to keep in mind that inflation pressures won't be sustained unless there is the income growth to enable consumers to tolerate those rising prices. If there's not the income growth, then you don't get the pass-through effect. And when we look at household income trends, it's still pretty tame. And that tells me that inflation pressures may be moving higher to some degree, but much more slowly than what appeared to be the case earlier this year.
Where do you suppose the Fed is on this right now?
Well, the Fed is wringing its hands over trying to figure out what the consequences of a trade war would be, and rightly so, because there could be substantial consequences, but we don't have very good modern precedent to think about what the trade war casualties would be. If we look at the last period with the major tariff escalation, we have to go back to Smoot-Hawley in the during the Great Depression, and certainly it's a very different economy now than it was at that time. So things are very different, and so we have to try to draw parallels. And one way to do that is to simply think of the tariffs as a tax increase. It's a tax increase on imported goods, so to speak. And when we do that, the price tag of those tariffs is about $30 billion. Now, that sounds like a big number, but when we put that in the context of a $17 trillion economy that's growing at close to a 3% pace, it really has a very small impact on overall growth.
Weekly jobless claims fall to a two-month low, and every time we talk about the employment picture and just the health of the job market, it does turn to wage growth. When do we start seeing these tremendous gains in our paychecks? But as you said, when it comes to inflation, it's the darkly ironic twist in this whole saga, that if we started to see our paychecks grow as a result of this robust job market, inflation takes off.
Exactly. So one tends to chase the other. It's very much a chicken and egg conundrum. Now, we're seeing a very modest pickup in wage pressures in the economy. But even though the unemployment rate is at 4% or potentially even below 4%, we're still not seeing the pass-through. So it should be a narrative which strengthens later this year. But a question mark or an uncertainty is all of the folks who drifted out of the labor force during the Great Recession and the immediate aftermath, whether they stayed home for childcare, went back to school, or simply fell out of the labor force, what will it take to coax them back in and therefore boost labor force participation? Well, certainly rising wages will do the trick. But if there's a lot of folks that really are just waiting on the sidelines, then that means that we'll have less of a price reaction in the labor market to bring them in. And this means the economy can continue to run hot with still muted wage pressures. And that allows the Fed to continue plodding along at this very gradual pace of interest rate increases.
Well, thank you very much for the insights, as always. Carl Riccadonna, Chief U.S. Economist at Bloomberg, based in New York. Coming up, a major tech company takes a hit because of a questionable acquisition.
Making sense of your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Shares of semiconductor maker Broadcom drop after the company announces it'll buy the software company CA Technologies. Let's look at why some investors are questioning the deal with Gary Kaltbaum, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management and a Fox News business contributor based in Orlando, Florida. Check him out on the web at GaryK.com. Gary, welcome back to the program. I guess Broadcom answers the question, how do you make $17 billion disappear? I mean, the street hates this deal. Why?
I would suggest the market thinks this is like McDonald's buying General Motors. Basically, it's not a fit. And when you are Broadcom and you told Wall Street weeks ago that you are only going to grow your company organically, and then you go and take $20 billion of your $85 billion market cap and spend it on a company that's outside of your business, looks like you're going to pay a penalty. And look, I'm a big believer on what the market says. And when you're a stock that drops 36 bucks on the news, it's speaking loud and clear. And I equate this, some people, I remember Intel once bought McAfee. That's a semiconductor buying a software firm, and they couldn't do anything with it, so they went and eventually sold it to another private equity firm. I think we're in the same realm right here.
So it's just simply a matter of they'll hold on to it and dump it and then just walk away, basically.
Potentially. And here's another side of it. CA, which used to be called Computer Associates, has been trying to sell itself for quite a while and could not find a buyer. And that also tells a little bit of a tale. So it feels like my best guess, the market thinks there's desperation on the part of Broadcom in that they have not been able to grow their business in a big way for a very long time. And now they're going outside to do it, and they're using all cash. And again, market doesn't like it. Simple as that.
Broadcom shares are down about 15% right now. It's pretty big drop. What's the lesson here?
Well, the interesting thing is it's down almost by the amount they are paying for the company, and that speaks for itself. The big lesson is you can't tell Wall Street one thing and do the other. You can't tell Wall Street you're going to grow organically, and, you know, they were trying to buy Qualcomm, and the deal never went through. You can't tell them you're going to grow organically, which means you're not going to buy anybody else, and then you go and do it, and then instead of buying a company, a semiconductor company in your industry, you go out and buy a software company. That's probably not such a good fit, and again, the market's speaking loud and clear, and I never argue with the market.
What if this works?
Oh, listen, hey, the jury's still out. We'll see what happens. I suspect it will not work. I do not see where there is a I think this is a square peg in a round hole, but I've been wrong before. The market's been wrong before, and we'll know within the next couple of years.
Let's talk about CA Technologies and just what it brings to the table, and can it even exist on its own in this world? It sounds like very much an 80s and 90s type software company.
Well, look, they do $4 billion in revenue, so obviously they do have lots of business, and they do have pretty good earnings on those revenues. The problem has been they really have not been able to grow in any way, shape, or form. So, yeah, they'd be a good, fine standalone company, but in the world of Wall Street, if you're not growing, it's not good news. And look, I can equate Walmart and Coca-Cola, who used to be the greatest growth stocks in history, that turned into no growth, and their stocks have done nothing forever. And that's what I think Computer Associates, CA Inc., as they call it, is the same right now. So, again, if nothing happened, I still think they'd be around, and maybe somebody would pick it up, or maybe they go private. Again, though, they're not growing the business, and that's not a good thing on Wall Street.
Well, thanks for the analysis. Gary Kaltbaum, President, Kaltbaum Capital Management, and Fox News business contributor based in Orlando, Florida. The website, GaryK.com. Still ahead in Technology Thursday, the video game Fortnite is becoming a huge part of life for teenagers and young adults. We'll explore that phenomenon, but business on the way.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's take a look at the markets now with Joan Doniger.
Well, Chris, tech stocks have been trading at records, so it makes sense now that the NASDAQ is too. Today's tech rally is pushing up all three averages, actually. The Dow by 215 points. The NASDAQ is gaining the most percentage-wise, about 1.25%, up 95 points to 7811. That is in record territory. The S&P is even closing in on 2800 again. It is up 22 points. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is gaining 0.5% with United Airlines parent company in the pilot seat there. Its shares are up about 3.5%. Let's check in now with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
USDA report at noon lowered ending stocks for U.S. corn this year next, and also world stocks next. And as a result, we have corn up. We have a December up 5.75 at 359. They were up 9. Bean stocks were raised in the U.S. and world. As a result, we had beans down 10 at one time. They're down 1.5 now at 8.46 3/4. Corn up 5, beans down 2. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thanks, Pete. The Dow up 214 points with business at 25 and 55. Live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Joan Doniger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are higher. We'll see what's given Wall Street a boost.
Technology Thursday, a look at the exploding business of competitive video gaming.
Rising fuel prices are becoming a major problem for airlines.
Chicago police investigate the death of a woman who was found by firefighters answering a call on the south side.
An FBI agent says a text message message saying, "We'll stop the election of Donald Trump," was written in response to a series of events, including an insult to the family of a fallen American soldier.
Wall Street, the Dow Industrials up 221 points, the NASDAQ gaining 99, and the S&P 500 up 24.
Mix of sun and clouds this afternoon, becoming hot, and air quality an alert in effect until midnight. High today near 90. It's 84 degrees in Chicago under partly sunny skies as the noon business hour continues, presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
Well, the markets are rallying today, and we're joined by Chuck Lieberman, Chief Investment Officer at Advisors Capital Management in Ridgewood, New Jersey. Welcome back to the program. Chuck, what's causing the elation on Wall Street today?
I think it might be that they've realized that the world didn't come to an end yesterday. The market sold off yesterday because we had another initiative by the U.S. with regard to tariffs against Chinese products, and the markets are worried that that could undermine the economy somehow, and that's the typical knee-jerk reaction. And today we realized the sun came up, companies are doing well, the economy is doing well. We will very shortly, within the next couple of days, start getting corporate profits reports for the second quarter. The expectation is those numbers are going to come in very, very positive, with year-over-year gains of 20% or better. And that makes the stock market not terribly expensive, in fact, maybe even cheap. So all of that provides a very sound foundation.
Any area in which you are looking at, hoping that it will be okay?
Well, you know, the issue is, can tariffs on trade really badly disrupt the economy and create problems? Certainly at the margin, tariffs are going to put some upward pressure on inflation. That is an issue when the U.S. labor market is already very tight, labor is scarce, wages are rising. So we could see a little bit of that. But really, it's more at the margin. The underlying fundamentals of the economy are very, very sound, and the situation is very good. So I'm really very positive about the outlook.
So what areas would you want to have an interest in or shares of right now?
Well, there are a couple of sectors of the economy that clearly are benefiting. So anything that, let's say, benefits from higher inflation, so anything real, meaning real estate, capital equipment, structures, infrastructure, all of that would be positively benefited. Anything that benefits from higher interest rates, so the financial system probably benefits from increase in interest rates, the banks in particular, that would be very attractive. Anyone positioned for rising rates would benefit. And then, of course, the flip side is also true. Utilities and real estate investment trusts would be hurt by higher rates. So those are areas, and especially the bond market. I shouldn't leave out the bond market. The bond market in particular is likely to get hurt pretty badly. And so we're very cautious about long-term bonds.
Based on the volatility in the stock market, I mean, the severe, you know, ups and downs over the course of since February or January at the very least, it calls to mind Dan Rather on election nights of yore. You want to say it's enough to make a cup of coffee nervous. At what point do you just sit back and say, let's focus on something else? The market's doing what it's doing. That's not the story right now.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to what you just said. Start off with the underlying economics is very supportive for stocks. So it's a great foundation. Secondly, the volatility is actually more of a return to normal volatility than it is abnormal volatility. Partly, we've gotten lulled into complacency because for almost 2 years, volatility was extremely low. So what started early this year was really a return to normal, and we've lost that perspective. It's amazing how quickly perspective gets lost here. So this is kind of normal, and the fundamentals are very good, so it makes me very comfortable.
Is that more or less an offshoot, just the way, you know, financial journalism is presented these days, where you do have to analyze every twist and turn of the market on a nearly minute-by-minute basis, and then you have over-caffeinated people on TV yelling at each other about every twist and turn of the market?
Boy, you just opened the door for me to just march right through. I couldn't possibly agree more. The 24-hour news cycle is an enormous obstacle, impediment to people to make money in the market. Every increase in the market is a great event. Every decline is a catastrophe. The typical man in the street doesn't appreciate that, doesn't understand that, doesn't have the perspective to be able to understand it. So I think the media actually is an enemy of investors. It scares them, gets them out of the market, which is the worst possible thing to do. There's an old line about the market. It's not timing the market. It is time in the market. You want to be invested. You want to be there for the long term. If you look back historically, there are enormous events that have taken place at many times in history over the last 50, 70 years. Huge events, everything from assassination of JFK, the Berlin airlift, the oil embargo, and yet stock prices today are vastly higher than back then. And it's because the economy has grown. That's what the stock market is tied to. And the worst thing people can do is, out of fear of market volatility, get out of the market and miss out on all that upside longer term.
Chuck, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us today. Chuck Lieberman is Chief Investment Officer, Advisors Capital Management in Ridgewood, New Jersey. Ahead, Technology Thursday, competitive video gaming, especially the smash hit Fortnite, is now very big business.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday on the Noon Business Hour, and this afternoon we're putting the spotlight on Fortnite and competitive video gaming, which is now a $1.5 billion industry. We're joined by Michael Pachter, who is analyst at Wedbush Securities in Los Angeles. Welcome back to the program, Michael.
Thank you, Chris.
Tell us about Fortnite. It is a huge hit.
It is. And, you know, I think they kind of caught lightning in a bottle. I mean, it was very smart of them to take a game that was for sale and not selling very well at 50 or 60 bucks and turn it into a free-to-play game. It had been built as a very cartoony a game with violence that is what they call comic mischief. So, you know, you hit somebody over the head and they go down, but there's no blood, there's, you know, nothing bad, and it just says you're out of the game. And, you know, so parents feel okay letting their kids play cartoony kind of violent games. And because it's free, it attracted a giant audience. I estimate they're at about 150 million monthly active players and probably have 400 or 500 million who have tried the game. And it's monetizing incredibly well because they've been really smart about how to charge for things in the game.
Yeah, let's talk about the monetizing. Do the players have a fee?
No, it's all free. And the opportunity to buy things, all the things that you can buy in the game don't help you. But one of the things that they did that was pretty innovative is they made it a third-person view. So you see your character in the game as opposed to a first-person game where you're looking down the barrel of a gun. And because you can see your character and because you're playing multiplayer with other people, you have, you know, some type of incentive to dress your character up. So they offer outfits, which they call skins, in the game. And where they were particularly innovative is that they made each skin a scarce resource. So they only offer them for a limited period of time or a limited number of skins. And then the other innovation is they charge a lot for them. So you can pay as much as 20 bucks for a skin. And other games have been charging between $1 and $5 for skins, and they weren't particularly scarce. This game was smart because when you know, if you passed up on the leopard skin, and then a few weeks later you saw somebody wearing it and thought it looked really good, it wasn't available in the store anymore. So they sell you skins. They sell you cosmetics to make your weapons look different. So today there was a picture of a pickaxe made out of balloons, which, again, is silly. The game takes place on an island, and you have to parachute into the island. So they created gliders that you can buy that have streams of different rainbows or clouds or other things. They have backpacks that you can buy, then you can pick up stuff that you collect on the way in the game. So it's been really clever as far as offering cosmetic items that don't help gameplay but allow players to show off to one another. And it looks like they're doing north of $200 million a month in revenue. So it's pretty impressive that they have apparently, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10% of their gamers paying and paying more than $10 a month. So it's a really, really impressive monetization.
In terms of a financial juggernaut, how does Fortnite compare to, say, Second Life or World of Warcraft or other kind of games where you live inside this world, you have your own avatar, you can dress it up? I mean, where does this place in the greatest hits?
Fortnite probably monetized more so far this year than Second Life has in its history. World of Warcraft averages probably about, probably about $1 billion a year. Fortnite looks like it's about that big. It's probably going to crack $1 billion its first full year. My guess is it'll moderate into the $1.5 billion range. But it's up there with League of Legends. It's up there with Clash of Clans as the most successful game ever, you know, out of the gate. We'll see how long that's sustainable, because obviously they're going to attract a lot of emulation. Call of Duty is going to come up with a Battle Royale mode this year. And so one would think that they're going to recapture their players who have migrated over to play Fortnite. Battlefield from EA is going to emulate probably early next year. I think you'll see dozens of competitors. I consider this game like Chicken McNuggets when McDonald's came up with those. They captured share from Carl's Jr. and Wendy's, you know, early on, and then the other hamburger chains decided to offer chicken nuggets of their own, and eventually somebody offered breast strips, and, you know, so they captured share back. That's what's going to happen with Battle Royale. You're going to see everybody emulate. Somebody's going to improve upon this and capture even more share. But I think Fortnite's here to stay. I think it's going to be a profitable game for many, many years.
Interesting. We started the program with a report on Broadcom, which interviewer told us he was doing all the wrong things. And now we're here with Michael Pachter talking about a company that's done all the right things.
Remember the good old days of Pac-Man and Ms. Pac-Man, when the measure of success was how many cartridges people bought, and now it's you can, you know, spend $200 inside the video game and not even know it. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. We'll meet a man from Chicago who's putting a new spin on dessert at family and work events, and still to come, the cost of fuel eats into airline profits.
Making sense of your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Fuel costs have been taking off, and it's impacting the bottom line to the airlines. Let's take a look at oil and gas with Patrick DeHaan, Senior Petroleum Analyst at GasBuddy.com. Patrick, welcome back to the show. What is the price of jet fuel these days, and how is it impacting the airlines' bottom line? And more importantly, how is it impacting the traveling public?
Well, first and foremost, it's probably having a far larger impact on those airlines. American Airlines saying just a couple days ago in its earnings that jet fuel is becoming a bigger concern. That stock was down 8% yesterday on concerns that high oil price would continue to affect it. We did see a big sell-off in the price of oil yesterday, with WTI falling back under $70 a barrel. That was thanks to news that dispute over Libya's ports is winding down and Libya will begin exporting. So at least a brief lull, but you have to wonder that once the summer is over, that this may, the high price of jet fuel, which, by the way, is just over $2 a gallon at the wholesale cost, may begin to impact how the airlines look at their fall schedules and what kind of aircraft they put on each route.
What are the basic factors that are leading to this?
Well, you know, you talk about it's very similar across the board, whether it be jet fuel, diesel or gasoline, and that's at the root of this. OPEC continues to control the amount of supply to the market by increasing a smaller than expected amount back in June. Oil prices certainly rallied. The bulls are back in the market, and there's certainly justification for oil prices being close to where they are, amidst high global demand and faltering output from Venezuela. That's kind of made the big dent in OPEC's goal. They did increase output by 600,000 barrels at their June meeting, but still, that really pales in comparison to the 1.8 million barrel cut that they instituted back in 2017. So I really think that the market could use more crude oil and keep oil prices at a place where oil companies continue to spend on new drilling and exploration.
Thanks for the info, Patrick DeHaan, Senior Petroleum Analyst at GasBuddy.com here in Chicago. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. Now WBBM Business from Bloomberg, sponsored by Top Grading Snapshot. Here's Joan Doniger.
Well, Rob, investors really are making up some lost ground today. The Dow is up 199 points. The NASDAQ, 93. The S&P, 22. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is gaining 0.5%, thanks to some lift from United Airlines. The NASDAQ is trading at a record level because Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, and Alphabet are all themselves trading at record levels today. They're pushing the NASDAQ to record trading heights, up to 7809. That's as investors push back on trade worries, with the help of some reports that the U.S. and China are willing to start talking about trade again instead of firing volleys of tariffs in a trade war. This time, the talks could reach a higher level. It's helping the industrial shares recover from the losses they've seen on trade worries, too. So Boeing and stocks like that are also doing better. The other part of the equation, earnings. The reports start pouring in tomorrow. Investors are expecting big things. Delta Airlines expects its profits, however, to be hit this year by the 50% jump in fuel costs it has seen, even as the airline did post better than predicted profits for last quarter. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Joan Doniger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.